Welcome to Discover Joyous Love with Anita DeFrancesco as your host. This is a hybrid of topics under the subjects of mindfulness, sexuality, and relationships. Hello, everyone. I'm Anita DeFrancesco, and you're listening to Discover Joyous Love. It is my podcast that is a hybrid of topics regarding relationships, mental illness, psychology, love, sexuality, and spirituality, and many different topics. So today we have a very special guest who has been with us in the past already, and she is back with us. And we are here with Bond Wright, and she is a fourth generation Reikian therapist, and which means that she was trained by two generations away from the first Reikian therapist, Dr. Willem Reich himself. Hi, Bond. How are you?
Hello, nice to meet you.
Hi, Bond Wright. How are you?
Out there. Hello to everyone out there.
First of all, before I continue bringing you information about Bond Wright, this is going to be an educational teach-in about the human psychological process. Now, Dr. Willem Reich, he was the creator of Reichian orgonomy therapy. And Bond Wright was trained at the California Family Study Center, Reichian training program for professionals in Burbank, California. She was also trained by Dr. Henry Hill, an orgonomist. Dr. Hill was trained by Ellsworth Baker. And Dr. Baker was trained by Dr. Reich. So she was academically educated in California. She is a trainer and has trained therapists in Los Angeles, Amsterdam, Denmark, San Francisco, and London, working with them and their client population, developing healing strategies. And she was a member of an 18-person therapist training program at the Santa Monica Therapy Center in the 70s. She is a university lecturer and has lectured at various universities and Human Potential Growth Center here and in Europe. She is a certified transactional analysis counselor. TA was developed by Dr. Eric Byrne from Carmel, California. Reverend Bond Wright is an ordained minister with the Association for the Integration of the Whole Person. And she teaches cross-cultural anthropological spirituality. And before I get into the scope of her work, maybe you want to say hello, or how's your day going, Bond Wright, with us here?
I'm very pleased to be with you again. I really enjoyed our last episode. Hello to everybody. Thank you for coming and being with us for the next hour.
And let's get into the, I want to talk about the primarily the scope of your work. So primarily the scope of Bond Wright's work includes opening the deep, powerful emotions and the somatic life of the body. That's number one. Life management. We all need life management. Existential disenchantment. That I just love. That's something I'd love you to talk about. Depression and loss, self-realization and identity crises, addiction and substance abuse, marriage, relationship, and conflict resolution, human sexuality, trauma and post-traumatic stress disorder, which is PTSD, as some of us know it as, creative process as it relates to acting, music, art, writing, etc. And I can say that I have worked as a patient of Bond Wright's for at least 15 years, Bond, maybe?
Yes.
Right, Bond? I'm right. 15 years I have worked with her, and she has opened me up in my emotions and taught me how to self-integrate and to become the whole person. And I really have to say, I'll let her tell you more about it, but the work is really, it is very different than other therapies out there. And it's something that you can understand yourself better and move into your higher power. So Bond, let's start with, so one of the questions that we want to start with, what makes Reichian therapy different from the, say, other therapies out there?
Okay. Our first podcast, our title was Advance Toward Pleasure and Mental Health and How They Are Connected. And so I would like to keep that theme going. And I would once again like to talk about the Senoi Indians in Malaysia. So the Senoi Indians in Malaysia, they have a dream culture, and the children dream and then they wake up. The adults give them instruction about, did you have a opponent in your dream? If you did, they're instructed to ask call your dream friends to defeat that opponent. They'll also ask the children, well, did you have sexual intercourse? Well, of course, the children are like, well, I'm not even sure what that is. And how different that is to certainly what we say to our children. First of all, we don't talk about dreaming. And secondly, we certainly would not advise our children to advance toward pleasure. So the parents of those young children, the Senoi Malaysian Indians, they do instruct them to do that. The child usually at some time or another does achieve that in their dreams. Why do they do this? Because they understand how important pleasure is to the mental health of their children. And you are a person I know who knows quite a lot about this yourself, because you teach quite a lot about it. So mental health and pleasure are very, very connected. And Wilhelm Reich also talked a lot about sexuality and mental health. Now, not all pleasure aspects of the human being is dependent on sexuality. It's really how the individual is able to enjoy their life, enjoy their friends, enjoy color, enjoy music, enjoy the wind on their skin, to need and to always proceed as a choice toward pleasure. So Reichian therapy, how is it different? It's mostly Reichian therapy is what's called body-based therapy. We believe that the body and the mind are connected. Most other kinds of therapies, like Gestalt therapy or transactional analysis or psychoanalysis, are very cognitive, brain-oriented, mostly in what you're thinking and analyzing a lot about yourself and your past, based more on a cognitive approach. That's very different than our approach. Our approach is, if you haven't worked it out on an emotional level, you have not worked it out. So psychoanalysis or analyzing yourself, why you did X, where you came from, that does have a certain value. We need to be able to understand ourselves in that way. However, it does not go far enough. So Reich developed what he called orgonomy. It's after the word orgone therapy. And primarily his theory is based on, I'll talk really quickly about him. By the time he was 13, he had lost both his parents and his country to war. His mother committed suicide. His father died after that. So Wilhelm Reich was very much alone. And he did go away as a soldier to fight. And after that, he went to Vienna and he went to study with Sigmund Freud at the Polytechnic Psychoanalytic Institute. Reich, at a very young age, about 21 or 22, opened an office down from the Polytechnic Mental Health Clinic. He began seeing patients. And in those days, madness was defined, insanity was defined very differently. It got redefined in the 70s here in the United States. The field of psychology or psychiatry took a leap forward. Madness and insanity used to be thought of as something like a moral kind of thing. You were born that way, you were bad, therefore. And people's extreme emotions were considered, even the devil speaking through them. We look upon that now as completely obsolete, nonsense, And so there's a famous film called Titicut Follies. And it's a film that an undercover journalist went to a state hospital in Massachusetts and filmed what was going on in that state hospital. And the film was suppressed by a judge for 25 years. And then it was released in the 80s. They wanted to hide what was going on in there. So it was shown at the Humanistic Psychology Conference in Washington, D.C. The film was so shocking in terms of how the patients were created or treated, they were actually called inmates, that it actually started a huge movement here in the United States, pushing forward a redefinition of insanity and explaining what causes insanity or what causes bipolar, what causes PTSD, what causes anxiety, what causes all these kinds of things. So it's a huge thing that happened. At that same time, people in the field discovered Wilhelm Reich. So Wilhelm Reich, he did something unusual with his patients. Rather than suppress them, suppress their extreme emotions, he encouraged them.
Interesting to open, like you did with me. You encouraged my suppressed, frozen emotions from the experiences I had of trauma in my life, whether it be, unloving parents or abusive men. And this is what I wanted to bring up and how you worked with me in opening up the stuckedness in the body, and the vulnerableness needs to come alive, correct? Yes?
Yes, absolutely. So he did something amazing. He encouraged them. So something astonishing happened to his patients as a result. They got better. They got better. So he actually deviated from Sigmund Freud's psychoanalytic process, and he encouraged his patients. He noticed that they started breathing differently, and he encouraged that. When he did that, they would have extreme explosions of emotions. So there are four basic emotions: anger, pain, fear, and pleasure, and variations on those four emotions. So a simple example of that is pain. You might feel a little sad. An extreme expression of that is paroxysm of discharging pain, crying, screaming, body changing movements, and so forth. So when he did that, he then began developing what he called orgone therapy. He did not call it Reichian therapy. That definition was created by the young smart aleck trainees here in the 70s. Yeah. And we were not trained as orgonomists per se, but we were trained in a very particular way at the California Family Study Center, at the Radix Institute. We were trained by two people, especially one that had been treated by Wilhelm Reich. So these four basic emotions, what we say primarily is that if you have not worked it out on an emotional level, you have not worked it out.
And what do you mean by an emotional level? Expressing, crying, screaming? I know that that's what you did with me, or at least that's what manifested through your approach of, talking with me, having me do some of the, the exercises, the movement, the bioenergetics, the different things that you interjected in with the Reichian therapy. So when you say that, what do you mean an emotional level? Some people think an emotional level is just talking or maybe a tear, but what is your meaning of that? I know what it is because I know what those emotions are when you get into that primal scream.
Because you experienced it, yeah.
Right, I did experience it through your expertise, of course, and you were my therapist for 15 years. And so I speak to people now working their emotions. And some therapists advise patients to, which is really wrong, they advise them to not break. Like my sister goes to a therapist and the therapist says, oh, you don't break, you don't break. And I said, you need to break, you need to break. You got all those emotions in you that need to be transformed and undone and put out there so that you can recreate that new you inside. That new you is born, that new you shows up. And when they say, oh, you don't break, you see how strong you are. I don't know if that's proper therapy, but I don't think so, but you're the master, so.
Yeah, no, we don't think it goes far enough. So let's take it. So, our approach is if you haven't worked it out on an emotional level, you haven't worked it out. So what's out there generally, which predominates out there, is talk or, oh, I feel hurt. But it's talking, we call it about-ism. About-ism. You're talking about how you're angry, or you're talking about how you're scared, or how you're enraged. Talking about it, if you want to know the taste of a pear, you must take a bite out of it. So it's totally experiential. So Reikian therapy has developed a way of working with the individual's personality and their body that enables the individual to discharge, we use the word discharge, powerful, deep emotions, sometimes because of incidences that happened maybe 50, 60 years ago. Some of my patients are in their 60s and 70s, and they will, during, we call it the intensive, the Reikian therapy intensive, is a session of which we utilize our approach to enable the individual to open whatever emotion is there. And it is a reaction. So what does anger, pain, fear, and pleasure look like? Well, anger may look like pounding, screaming, growling, crying, hitting with a tennis racket on the mat. It looks like that. You actually go back to the incident that caused you whatever your trauma was.
Now, so would anger be a resistance in the body?
No.
Okay. All right. So continue. Go ahead. Right. I wanted to talk about resistance too in this, if you can, later.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah. So because the cognitive therapists don't have the complete picture, in our opinion, they made things up to try to describe certain things, like, oh, you're resisting. And then it puts the onus on the client, on the patient. And the poor patient and the poor client, they're really quite innocent. They're not on purpose resisting. In fact, yes, they are resisting, but that was a coping mechanism they had to develop when whatever happened to them as a child. Let's take, for instance, someone who had been, well, I'll take a particular case. Let's talk about a particular case.
Okay, let's get into some of the cases that you've worked. Okay.
So sometimes you need to really discharge in a here and now a present time event that happened. And sometimes it's an incident or an event that happened long, long time ago when you were a child, maybe even at birth. And so until you actually are able to do that, you will be carrying that around in your psyche and in your body, and it will affect everything that you do to the detriment. So if you try to sign up for classes at UCLA, that's going to be right there for you. Your held emotion from long ago. If you're trying to decide on buying a car, which car to buy, that's going to be in you and what happened before. So let's take somebody who, he walked into my office. I talked a little bit about him during the first episode, and he's in a three-piece suit, looks very powerful. And he's not somebody you would really want to tangle with. And so it does turn out that he is an attorney, and he comes complaining about the fact that he's a major procrastinator. So how people treat procrastinators is often they shame them, or tell them just to pull yourself up by your bootstraps and just do it, you know. So there's a lot of shaming and judgments going on. People who procrastinate, they really live quite a embarrassing, even humiliating life in a certain way. So what has happened? Yeah, what has happened to this person? His natural vegetative process as a boy got interrupted by a traumatic experience. So children naturally flow. They naturally paint. They naturally sing. They naturally want to connect with others. They naturally create things. They naturally cry. You can see children, they'll cry really hard, and then it's all over, and they move on. So it's really quite a remarkable thing to see children like that. It's funny, you know, like Christian religion, I'm not a Christian, but they do have something that I like. They say a child will lead them. So what it means is the child has yet to be traumatized, is yet to be blocked, is yet to have all these powerful emotions stopped in them. So everybody you meet, all your friends, everybody you see on television, everybody you meet at your job, everybody who walks down the street, everybody is holding in powerful emotions from what happened in the past. Wright called that the emotional plague.
Okay, because of all the emotions that they're holding on to or without expression.
Exactly. So he called that the emotional plague. He called that stasis. In cognitive therapy, it's called resistance. There is even a certain amount of shaming that goes on to clients. Well, you're just not ready to express, or why are you resisting? Well, this leaves the individual at such a loss, because here is my client. He was the child of a first marriage. His mother died of, it was not legal in those days, a butcher abortion. She died. He lost his mother. That was traumatic right there. His father remarried, but the second family did not want him. They did not want him in that family. So two of the men in the family conspired to actually kill him. And how they did it was they set up a swing in the cellar, and they invited him to come and swing, which as a child he was excited about. But they kept pushing him harder and harder until his head crashed into the ceiling and he crashed to the floor. His grandmother fortunately heard him screaming. She came running down the stairs and called 911. They took him to the hospital. There was a great deal of pressure that had built up in his skull. The physician had to make an opening, and fluid spurted out of his brain. Extremely traumatic experience. After that, nobody talked to him about it. No, there was no counselor to help him process. He had no counselor to process what happened to his mother, his loss of his mother. He had no counselor to help him process what happened on that day. So people, usually they go through a lot of traumatic experiences and they have no help. They have no help at all to help them process any of that. So he held this within him, all these feelings of terror. It's very traumatic to have two adults try to kill you.
He was aware that they tried to kill him.
Yeah.
Well, see, the thing is, a lot of parents don't know that we need to process. I mean, it's still kind of a new thing to people think that, oh, you'll be okay, you know, sleep it out. If you send them off to, you know, a game, a ball game or something, and they'll be fine. But I don't think our world is that educated in knowing that children need to process, the actual quote unquote to process. And where we're in the dark ages still, I think, in a way.
So we were very much into the later ages in the 70s. And so there were vast numbers of Reichian therapy groups. There were all kinds of therapy groups out there. And there were self-help groups. There were groups where people actually came together and they would, somebody would study Wilhelm Reich, or they'd come and study with me, and then they would go off and they'd form a group and they'd have emotional release exercises that they would do. So a lot of self. And then it all started changing the zeitgeist again about 12, 15 years ago. So like where we are again is there's not a lot of acknowledgement or participating in powerful emotional release. And instead it's all back to drugs, pharmaceuticals. It's all back to talking. So Reich would say, uh-oh, here's the reestablishment of the emotional plague. So my client, let's call him John. A lot of my clients, all of them really, live in kind of a hell. So, of course, not all children are traumatized. I mean, it's not always, they don't come into therapy because they're traumatized. They come in because they're dysfunctional in one way or the other. Sometimes it's because of a crisis. Sometimes just a lot of bad training. And they're just very shut down and they have never actually developed as a human being, and they need to learn how to become a human being. So someone like him will stick with him one of the terrifying things that happened with him, his procrastination, is he had a terrible time filing papers in the court. Now, this is a very dangerous thing for attorneys. He can get into all kinds of trouble with this. And whatever he did, whatever little speeches he gave himself to himself, whatever other people, his wife or whoever, would give him pep talks, nothing really worked, and he continued to procrastinate. So this is a very humiliating position for him to be in. He is a participating adult. He is an attorney. He does take clients. He is working on cases. It's remarkable, in my opinion, they never got through law school. So many people have all this trauma locked inside their psyche and in their bodies, and they have to get through medical school. They have to get through law school. They have to get their master's, their bachelor's degrees, whatever. They have to keep going to their job. And this is much different, a very terrifying experience, painful experience, than an individual who can do all those things, who is not PTSD, who is not traumatized. You just go to school and you just look at the lessons and you do it and you pass the test and that's that. This is not the life of people who have been traumatized. So what happens with people like that is they are really at the mercy of their own trauma. And in transactional analysis, Eric Burns said he didn't think it was id, superid, ego, which is what Sigmund Freud said. He said, I think it's parent, adult, and child. Three ego states, he said. Because we are reared by the nuclear family, and I think three ego states form. So in the child ego state, it's emotions, creativity, and sexuality. Out there in general psychology, it's called the inner child, which I find that term kind of ridiculous. There's no inner child, there's no outer child, it's just child. And child, you know, is not just you're 4 or 5 years old. You have a child when you're 80 or 90. You have a child ego state. So TA is like brilliant in that way. The adult ego state is information only. It has no emotions in the adult. We think of the adult as the grown-up person. But actually, it's the part of our ego that, where is your offices at Barrington and Gateway in Los Angeles, California. There is no judgment. There's no emotions, no nothing in that. In fact, right now, I am pretty much in my adult ego state, aren't I? I'm teaching. I'm giving information. Hopefully, there's a little child here, you know, a little bit of a child, rather. So I hope it's creative and interesting to people. So out of the child comes the creativity, comes the emotions. In the parent ego state, Eric's vision was we were born with a parent ego state because we are reared in a nuclear family. We don't think that's true of people who are born in Australian Aboriginals because they are reared in tribes. But we here in the United States, near the Senoi are reared in tribes also. So the individual's personality develops, and that parent is initially at birth a nurturing parent. I nurture myself, I nurture you, and I nurture the planet. But what happens is because of the neuroses level of the family, something starts happening in that parent ego state. It starts splitting off and becomes what's called the critical parent. So the critical parent is the one that says, you're not okay, you're bad, you're stupid, you're no good, it's all your fault, etc. And it is passed down from generation to generation to generation. The same, we call it a life script, is passed down. Your parents, your grandparents, your great parents, they pass it on, pass it on, pass it on. So we'll get back to John, my client. He's in a terrible pickle because in order to get his papers filed on time, he has to then kind of either give strict orders to his staff or even beg them to help him get his papers on time. So he's really in quite a position. And so in this law practice, there's all this turmoil going on, and it's all because he procrastinates. What happens? Well, at the point that you have been traumatized, that is where you stop growing and being and feeling. You're stuck. You're stuck there. And then these poor individuals have to go ahead anyway and find a way to be an adult, to lead an adult's life, to participate as an adult. So that is exactly why there's all these extreme games and dramas and all this stuff going on. So the third session, I gave him the Reikian Therapy Intensive, and he's screaming, sitting on a mat, laying on a mat. It's all about the day when his two uncles tried to kill him. He went right back there. I don't have to tell them to go anywhere. I don't have to lead them to anything. They'll go there right away. What does that mean? That means nature. Nature is supreme. Nature will enable that person to go right to the point of the trauma. If you break your ankle, it won't start yelling at you until you fix it. Same thing is true of the psyche. So I don't need to do, I don't need to say to him, you should go back to that event. I don't need to do that. So through several months of working through that one particular incident, till he came out the scent and he was done, he was finished with it. That's a miraculous kind of thing that happens. Sometimes all my clients primarily see me twice a week. And sometimes I'll do something called a residential. And you come in every day for 1, 2, or 3 weeks for 1 or 2 sessions. So what's involved here? Well, the transference, of course. So everyone around him, he'll transfer onto them what happened with the loss of his mother. He'll transfer onto them all the men who tried to kill him. He'll transfer all of this on. Why? Why? Because he's stupid? Why? Because he should know better? Why? Because he's a weakling? No, because the human psyche is set up in such a way that whatever it is you need to finish with, and you didn't, you will transfer this onto everyone. And every minute, way. What is the advantage of working through this transference? Well, you don't transfer anymore in front of you. If I sit in front of a class and I hold up a rose and I'll say to the people, write down in a piece of paper in front of you what I'm doing. Most of the people in there will not say you're sitting there holding up a rose. Most of the people in there will say, she's going to hit me with that rose. She's just trying to make fun of me, humiliate me. She is just, so all their transferences will come up. And they do this with everybody. So eventually, John got to the place where he didn't procrastinate anymore. He was finished and done with the attempted murder on him. It's well worth your struggle. It's well worth your work because the payoffs are so high. And so he came in and he'd say, I even make friends with the opposing attorneys in court. So he no longer transfers anything onto them like, oh, these are men that will kill me. He no longer did that. He made very radical changes in his practice. Some of the people that he'd made psychological deals with that they would support him were really not people he shouldn't really be around. So he laid some of those off and he hired new ones, which then his practice is much healthier with everyone. He doesn't need to make any secret psychological deals with, well, if you help me get my papers, I'll pay you more or I'll let you all these deals. It's a very humiliating experience for people. But my approach to the kind of work I do and how I view it, people, I don't judge them. I don't judge anyone. I don't put anyone down. I don't say I learned not to do that. You know, I don't say, oh, well, they're just a procrastinator because they're lazy. No, that's not. I am after the dark, deep story. Why does this person act like this? What happened to them a long time ago that they are now doing this? So, you know, we could talk about, so transference is like extremely important. Doing it, you did it, I did it, you know, years ago. I've had a huge amount of therapy myself. You have to have quite a lot before you're even admitted into training. And living a life where you don't transfer, it's like Ram Dass. I don't know if you know who Ram Dass is.
Of course, Ram Dass, yeah.
So our generation knows Ram Dass, right? But a lot of people don't know who Ram Dass is anymore. You know, Gen X doesn't know who Ram Dass is. But Ram Dass would say, be here now, right? That's what
right,
he
I mean, right, in the now, yes.
So that's kind of like nice to hear, but how can you be here now? How can my client John be here now when he's just full of terror? You know, he's just full of pain. He's just full of sorrow. He's full of humiliation. He can't be here now. He can't be here now.
Right.
So when we begin to understand how that we do transfer and how we transfer, and how to learn how to be a Reichian client. That's very important. You had to learn that yourself. You had to learn actually how to submit. It's a scary word, you know, submit unto a process. Well, why are you here? You're here because you can't do it yourself. You're here seeking a therapist because you can't do it yourself. And of course, many of my clients have feelings of a certain amount of shame about that. It's not their fault. It's not their fault. Yeah. So teaching my clients that it's not your fault. You did the best you could. Let's go back to John. He did the best he could. And many of my clients, you know, they develop a very active critical parent, you know, well, you're a fool. You're stupid. You can't get your papers, you know, filed in the court. You're not a real lawyer. You know, don't let anybody know what an idiot you are. So demystifying that critical parent and counseling him to the place where his nurturing parent gets to the place of saying, you did the best you could. You've always done. In fact, you know, you're a hero. You're a hero. Just like I viewed you, Anita, I viewed you as a hero. You're definitely a hero, in my opinion. So you're welcome. So I am a hero too. So everyone that I work with, they are heroes. There is no other way to describe them. And they've done the best they could. So I will talk a little bit more about some of my other cases.
Yes, the cases. You're listening to Discover Joyous Love. I am your host, Anita DeFranco. I is Bond Wright, who is a Reichian therapist in Los Angeles. And we are going to continue here. Let's hear some of the cases, the human transformation. This is part two of a series of a podcast to come with Bond Wright as my guest. Maybe the human transformation, which all of this is human transformation, what we're talking about. And would you refer to this question as somatic, you know, body-based therapy or just body-based?
Well, those are the words that are created by cognitive therapists and then taught to the public. You know, there's a separation, right? Your body. No, you are your body. Your body is you. And you don't think of your head as your body, but it is.
You know? Yes, that makes sense when you think about it.
Exactly.
Right, your head is attached to your body. Oh, my
right.
God.
And they are connected. And it's all one thing. So I'll give you an example of what happened to humanity. Let me tell you what happened. There was this frog that got born somewhere on the planet Earth. And the frog was kind of a mischievous frog. And it noticed these centipedes going by. Centipedes like have 1,000 legs. So these centipedes go by, zoom, you know, zoom, going by. And the frog, a little bit mischievous, he said to the centipede one day, which leg goes after which? They're in creative. The centipede fell in a ditch. contemplating, unable to run. So that frog made that poor little centipede go up into its head.
Right. And he and they're into their full body and mind. The whole thing is one. Animals are. Generally, animals are, especially because they don't have a voice. And they don't have that voice to bring the ego, the self-judgment, the critical parent in there to separate them, to isolate them, to split them off, right? That's what splits you off is the words, when the words get in the way.
Yeah, exactly. So I needed to give an intensive to that centipede. And so I had centipede, clinic, and the centipede came, and I did give an intensive. No, just kidding. So so it was very successful with the centipede, and then she went off on her own, and she kept, you know, all 1,000 legs kept moving. So the basis of what is the basis of all transformational work? What is the basis of all this? What is the absolute basis of everything? So here it is. When you become what you are, instead of what you think you should be, change and growth occur. It's called the paradoxical theory of change. So all therapy is based on that. So someone goes, well, how do I know what I really am? Well, look at John. What John really was, not only was he a 60-year-old, very powerful-looking attorney, he was also a 9-year-old boy experiencing an attempted murder in the cellar. You see?
Yes.
And then anyone I've ever treated who've been sexually molested, well, they got themselves together as best they could, but that's locked up in them. That's sexual molestation is a terrible, terrible thing. Because it really is a serious strike at the person's identity. The issue of humiliation is very undertaught in our culture. But humiliation is primarily a murder of the person's identity.
That's what interesting. It is. I like the way you put that. It's a murder of the person's identity.
Yeah, that's what it is. Yeah. And so those who know how to perpetrate humiliation on others understand that very well. And that's why they do it. So that's a whole other area, you know, we could talk about all that kind of thing. So the basis of all really good therapy, you know, we think that our therapy is good, you know, is the paradoxical theory of change. So it's always, so you talked a little about what's resistance, you know, what's resistance, you know.
I find people being very resistant, but they feel that if you're very expressive and like someone made a comment, I do my dance and they go, oh, that's a mental illness, you doing your dance. And like being, you know, being who I am, like you said, I'm not being what I want to be. I'm being who I am. And I said, well, it's also a mental illness if you're in resistance and you can't express yourself and you're locked up and you're afraid to show who you are. If you're worried about what people think, that's a mental illness because it means that you're locked up and suppressed from some trauma or something. So can you elaborate on that?
Yes. Yeah, exactly. So resistance and defenses were put there in the first place to really save the person's sanity under really terrible conditions. And I'll give you several examples, like, for instance, what's John supposed to do now? So he had to learn to change. He had to learn to become more armored. He had to learn how to adapt, to go about his life like that had never happened. So he became, and some people are in families that there's a real sadistic parent in there that are continually perpetrating acts of crime on their children. How do these children ever survive this? They have to suppress their emotions. They cannot afford to show anger. If they showed anger to someone like that, they risk being literally killed. So, and then, okay, let's talk about somebody who's like a very interesting client of mine. She was, she and her mother were in Singapore during the Second World War. And the Japanese came in, they bombed Singapore. And so very quickly, ships went out. Ships went out, and some of the ships carried women, and some of the ships carried men. Okay. The ship she was on carried Dutch women, Australian women, English women. So what happened was Air Force came in and bombed that ship also. A lot of the women were killed. Some of them swam to shore, and it was in Sumatra. So as they climbed up on the shore, the Japanese army came in jeeps, and they picked them up, and they put them into a concentration camp, a prisoner of war camp. And she's like 3 or 4 years old, something like that. I won't go into too much details about it because we spend a whole hour on that. So the Japanese were extremely sadistic. Sadomasochism is another issue we could talk about another time.
Yes.
And, yeah. So this young woman, this child, had to live in her developmental years in a Japanese concentration camp. They were not given food unless they sent out a woman to ask for it. Problem with that was, a lot of the times, a woman would go out and they would just simply beat her and send her back. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it meant that, and all the women, they organized, each one, they took turns of going out. And sometimes the Japanese would give them food. So it's their particular brand of terrorism. So one day, we'll call her Fee, F-E-E. Her mother's turn was to go out, and Fee, seeing this, was so horrified to see that her mother might go out and get beaten, she ran ahead of her. Mm. And she met up with the Japanese soldier. What a terrifying experience. Fortunately, the Japanese soldier did take some pity on her and gave her some fruit or something, and she went back in. Fee, then they were finally liberated. She went back to her country in Holland, tried to grow up and tried to live like everybody else with all of that inside of her. Whereas most children, they might be going to kindergarten, you know, and playing with balls and, you know, playing with scotch, you know, hopscotch or whatever else. This little girl was in a Japanese concentration camp where everyday life was just miserable. It was agony. All of this is locked into her. She came to the United States with her husband, who was sent here by the Dutch government to study at one of our universities. Through a series of intensives, all of this had to come out, which it did. And in one particular session, she literally flew out of the camp. She flew out of the camp.
Really?
Right. So she had left the camp many years earlier. Emotionally, psychologically, she was still in the camp. So during a group setting where I first give a lecture about how to change your human potential, and the intensive mats are set up and you present yourself as a client, and then I work one-on-one with you. During that intensive, she literally flew out of that camp. So her life completely opened up after that. Fee will never be a fully functioning person like you or I. However, the therapy did prevent her from being incarcerated, from being non-incarcerated, institutionalized. And through the process of therapy, she discovered she was quite an extraordinary artist. So the creativity of the person is very much in the dialogue of this kind of work. And she got a job from the government, you know, illustrating scientific graphs and so forth. She was so very good at it. So this therapy enabled her to stay out of being institutionalized. She was able to have a marriage and have two children. She was able to make a living for herself, although, you know, somewhat underdeveloped. Her treatment was cut short because she was, her husband got his PhD and returned to Holland. So over and over and over and over again, it's paradoxical theory of change. When you become what you are instead of what you think you should be, change and growth occur. So what did she think she should be? Well, she and John, what did he think he should be? He thinks he should be trauma-free. He thinks he should be a fully functioning person. He thinks he should be able to file his papers on time. What did Fee think? Well, she thought she should be able to behave and act like everybody else. But it's not possible. They have to become what they are. Only then growth and change occur.
So they have to get, yes, they have to accept themselves and surrender to, you know, and accept where they were traumatized, what happened. And that's the work, really, getting to that point of really loving themselves and accepting and being
able
to.
And that's the process of this kind of therapy, the tools and the concepts. And group work is very important for people. A lot of people are way too scared, way too frightened to go into a group scenario. Re-socialization needs to happen. And a wonderful thing about group or workshop is individuals often say, that was so good for me, I just thought it was me. I thought there was just something wrong with me. And they get to see other people having intensives. And it is an extremely accelerated educational experience for them. One group setting or workshop, in my opinion, is like worth 6 months of private work. But not everybody can really tolerate it. They can't stand it. But contact, you know, there's this singer, her name was Chris Williamson or Holly Near, I don't know which, but she has this song. It says, touches blow your cover. Will show you to yourself. That connection is so important. You see yourself, you feel yourself when you're connected to other people. Very different than when you're all alone. We can isolate ourselves, we can get disconnected from our feelings, but the moment you present yourself in a group or a workshop setting and you watch other people, what they're dealing with in a very safe, very rational, very nurturing environment is amazingly enables the individual to really put into effect that paradoxical theory of change, to really become what they need to become.
Right. So it takes, of course, it takes, you know, an expert as yourself, Bond, right, to work with them and to encourage those emotions to come alive again.
Yes. So let's talk about, I'm not going to go into.
So we have maybe about five or seven more minutes.
Yeah.
You're listening to Discover Joyous Love. I'm your host, Anita DeFrancesco. My guest today is Bond Wright, who is a Reichian therapist in Los Angeles.
Okay.
All right.
So pleasure. What's the role of pleasure? All of these individuals have not had very much pleasure. And so actually teaching them to be open and willing to encounter pleasure, to bring pleasure into their life, to treat themselves good, to learn how to treat themselves good, to learn what sensuality is and how important sensuality is, just the joy of standing outside and feeling the Santa Ana winds on your skin, and how lovely and wonderful that is, and standing there and watching the palm trees. You know, you have a palm tree in the back there. Not everybody has palm trees or listening to us, but watching the beauty of the palm trees, enjoying the phases of the moon, learning that to give to others of yourself is to get instantly in the moment. When you give of yourself to others, of your love, your care, you get immediately. So learning how to love, learning to be in love, learning how to enable your body to grow and accept pleasure is very important. And when you're set on that course, away from the course you were set on by your parents, by society, that is what creates mental health. We cannot be mentally healthy unless we participate in the activity of self-pleasuring and pleasuring with other human beings. So we go back to the Senoi Indian, right? They teach their children to advance toward pleasure. So this program really does bring that up as an issue and teach and enable everyone to see pro-life, not pro-death, as their destiny, pro-pleasure and not self-denial, to go more towards pleasure.
Wow, this is a whole lot. And the pleasure lives throughout the body, the mind, the whole experience is the pleasure, whatever the pleasure is. It can be anything. It's just living the happiness, the joy. Is that most people think of pleasure as sex, you know, and really that's not what it is at all. That's like the very bottom line.
It's included.
It's included, but sure. It's not the top line of things. No. This has really been a wonderful, wonderful experience and lecture talking with you today. I feel so much more empowered and inspired and educated. And I feel like I've learned a whole, every time I speak with you, Bondwright, I feel like I learn a whole lot more. And at the same time, I'm getting transformed just by looking at you, listening to you and talking to you. And so I think that we are going to, you know, stop the interview now. And if there's anything you'd like to say, or how can people reach you? Where can we get in touch with you if anyone would like to? And I'll put that in and have it all there, but you can tell the audience.
Well, you can reach me at 310-450-3396, 310-450-3396. And you can go to my website, which is really outdated at this point. I'm looking for a good new web designer. I said that the last episode. I haven't found one yet, but I'm determined. It'll just be a very simple thing. I'm not going to go into any big elaborate explanation. I mean,
a few pages, just to show who you are, put your stats in there and what the work is. I can help you get someone.
Website. Thank you. I'd appreciate it. And you can write to me. You know, good old fashioned, write a letter. It still works. And so those are the ways.
And where would they write to you? Where would they write to you at the?
Right Body Mind Therapy Center. Right Body Mind Therapy Center. 11674 Gateway, One Word Boulevard, Suite C, West Los Angeles, California, 90064. So those are the ways you can contact me. It's been a pleasure working with you again, Anita.
Yes.
You're one of my favorite people.
And so, my favorite.
You're a hero, Anita. You are definitely a hero. And I know that very intimately.
Yes, but without you, I wouldn't have transformed, because you were a big part of my transformation.
Yeah,
you were
a challenge.
Yes, but I must tell my audience, get on the phone, give Bond a call, because if you will become the real person that you were meant to be, and you will feel so empowered, so it is just something that you need to do. If you are challenged with emotional stuckness or you're not happy, maybe you're not happy or not where you want to be. And if that's the case, let's give Bond a call. All right, Bond, thank you very much. And
thank you very much. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
DiscoverJoyousLove.com, TantraWisdom.com. It's all one website, so you can go to the YouTube. This will be posted there. It will be posted on the social medias, but DiscoverJoyousLove.com, you can go there, and it'll also be on the website there and the YouTube channel as well. All right, thank you, Bond. I'm going to close out.
Take care. Goodbye, everyone. Good luck.
Goodbye. Goodbye.